Simply because, you know, when you do it for real, there's no room to tap out. There's no tap out. Either you're going to break the bone or you're going to crack the skull. You know? So, thus, you have to know how to when and where to control it. Well, like I said, the padded is good. It gives you that starting point. And the real stuff, you have to have some kind of check and balances to do real. So, somewhere in between is where you want to shoot for. At the same time, you don't want to rely too much on the padded stuff because you also develop bad habits.
Sure.
And plus, in reality, you don't know who won. If I got a padded stick and I got a headgear and I got a full pad body armor, you hit me 20 times and I hit you 20 times, right? Who really won? You know, it's hard because you're padded, not padded.
Sure.
You see, I can't measure how much bruise you got and how many broken bones you got. I can't measure that because we were padded. Mm-hmm. You see. So that's the danger part of the padded stuff. It gives you a false sense of confidence. It gives you a false sense of understanding sometimes. And it's not really a good gauge, a good measurement of the real art.
Sure.
You were a community organizer for youth and students back in the day. As community organizers ourselves, we found that many Filipinos born here in the U.S. sometimes have identity issues and normally have limited background of their roots and heritage. Did you encounter similar issues back then when you were also organizing, and did you try to promote the Filipino martial arts?
I had similar types of experience simply because it wasn't out there in the earlier years, in the 70s and 80s and 90s and even up till now in some areas of a collegiate level or community level, people don't know about it. And the internet is a recent phenomenon and it's being exposed a lot. Back then, there was A, not enough instructors, B, not enough people to show, right, the art. And so in our community here in Chicagoland area, I was one of very few that was pushing it and showing it and organizing it. As you allude to the identity crisis and what have you, when Filipinos back then even would think of martial arts, they say, oh, karate, martial arts, you know. Like karate, oh, yeah, karate, oh, martial arts, I know martial arts, yeah, that's what Dolpe says with the Sayonachi, yeah, Sayonachi, you know, I go run Sayonachi Nella school, you know, here's my slippers, you know, I do my two-finger salute and grab my slippers and run away, right, so... That's the extent of martial arts, in a sense, with the mass media or with the general public. You sort of have to be in the mix to know that it exists, or that there's people that do this type of stuff. That's always a challenge. Even now, that's a challenge. One problem now, I also explained to you that it's hard to just teach Filipino martial arts and get students. So what instructors do is they'll open a storefront, and you know, we already know one of them, right? Extreme Kung Fu. They open a storefront and say, oh, let's teach what people want. Let's teach them yoga, aerobics, cardio, what's popular now, mixed martial arts, Krav Maga, Kung Fu Wushu, boxing, kickboxing, Muay Thai. That's popular, let's teach that. You see? Oh, and by the way, let's also teach ninjutsu and let's teach martial arts. You see? But how many people you could come to the ninjutsu class? You count them in your fingers. How many people come to FMA? You can count them in your fingers on most Friday nights. Most Friday nights is four people. They're regular. Mm-hmm. And four people on FMA, right? Muay Thai, 20, 30 people. Mm-hmm. See? Because that looks easy. That looks like something they can do. That looks popular because it's out there. It's Ong Bak. It's UFC. MMA. It's MMA. You see? So whatever you infuse in the media, that's going to be what they're going to be after. And then the recent phenomena where they took the reality TV, right, put the UFC fighters and give them character and make people in the mass mainstream identify with it. So now they're MMA fans. Mm-hmm. They're followers. They follow everybody on Facebook and all that, see, because that's mass media. Mm-hmm. What is good that's sort of somewhat happening in FMA is sort of getting a little bit of that spillover economics. A little bit of spillover. Because where there's MMA, right? And there's also a few FMA practitioners and a few FMA fans. So there's a little bit of that spillover coming in, you see. So in a sense, that's good, you see. And as far as what we teach, it's hard for FMA just to come out and teach and be able to draw, attract, keep students, you know, simply because, A, there's not a whole lot of qualified instructors, you know, it's getting there, right? But initially, it hasn't been a whole lot of instructors. There's only a few of us trying to push and promote it. And B, you know, the popularity is not quite there, unlike MMA or Muay Thai or all that kind of other arts. They're more popular compared to us, and students identify with it more. You know, you start, like I said, you start clacking sticks, it's hard for them to identify. You start doing hubud-lubud, hard for them to identify. You start doing reverse-reverse, disarms and all that, it's kind of hard for them to identify, you see. But I tell you what, it's a comprehensive body of knowledge that even some of the law enforcement police officers get stumped when they start learning. They get stumped. Like, what is this? This is foreign to us. What do you mean, hold the baton and hit me this way and disarm me that way and lock me 20, 30 different ways, you know? It's too PhD level for some people to fathom. And so in one sense, it's got a lot of good, but in one sense, it's very hard to attract people to get into it. And also the fact that the MMA and the UFC and the Muay Thai is always going to draw more people, the aerobics, the cardio, kickboxing, the Krav Maga, all those popular arts, the karate, you know, is always going to attract more art. Filipinos are going to, you know, even now, some of them don't hear a lot of FMA. Only recently, maybe it's more of a recent phenomenon. But back then, in those days when I was organizing it, you know, when I was a youth organizer, they haven't heard of it. We had to educate.
Or if they did hear of it, they probably didn't see the value in it.
Right.
Because I remember you telling me a story how they would even make fun of it.
Oh yes, true story. I went to a Philippine Independence Day picnic. So they had the food, they had the dancers, right? And they had all these Philippine culture-related things going on. Somebody introducing something to introduce the young kids to the Philippine culture. Here we come, boom, on stage, with our congas, boom, 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 boom. Hitting sticks, hitting swords, blah, 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 you know. Blades, knives, swords, sticks come out, right? And the crowd, including older, middle-class Filipinos. You know, this is, again, you know, here it is, 1980s, right? Here I am, I'm in my 30s, right? And here's older Filipinos in their 50s, who are 20 years older than me, 30 years older than me, right? Some of them have even seen, right, their older brothers and older uncles go to war, you know? And some of them, you know, I've seen Philippine culture, exposed to Philippine culture. They still made fun of Filipino martial arts because I was there promoting Filipino martial arts. It's Filipino martial arts, and this is how we present it. Like I said, when you present it, it doesn't look like anything. It's kind of hard to fathom, you know? And so they were laughing at us. They laughed us on stage, you see? So I turned around, and in a sense, I wrote a column. And someone said, well, you know, here's what I'm trying to do. I just want to address the fact that some members of the Chicagoland Filipino community make fun of the very same arts that save and salvage, you know, the freedom of the Philippines. Because this is the art that defended you from the Spanish colonization to the American occupation to the Japanese invasion. These arts basically saved the lives of many Filipinos because this is the one that kept the fighting spirit alive. This is the one that trained Filipino warriors how to defend the homeland.
Sure.
If not for these arts, if not for these strong souls that help on these three conflicts, you know, Philippines would not be the way it is today. And here we're commemorating Philippine Independence Day. We were, you know, made independent because we won World War II. we won our, we beat the Japanese, in a sense, in our own soil.
Sure.
Right? And what did we use to beat that? Sure, we had the help of Americans, we had the help of technology, but we have brave souls, we have brave Filipino war heroes that fought and used these techniques and these arts. You know what I mean? They're all Filipino martial arts. Mm-hmm. The fact that you know how to use the Philippine terrain, you're using Filipino martial arts. Because terrain training is part of Filipino martial arts. Underwater, above water training is part of Filipino martial arts training. Hilly, muddy areas of training is part of training. Whether you're using a gun or using a bolo or using empty hand. It's terrain training. It's Filipino martial arts. Mm-hmm. We can't obviously teach it here because we don't have any mud. We don't have any rice paddies here in my essence. We don't have water in my essence. So I can't teach you that.
Sure.
But we go to the Philippines now and we train it like that. And you learn to fight in those Philippine conditions. That's Filipino martial arts. That's the concept of what the study of ninjutsu is. Or the study of, the Khans, the Kublai Khans, the Genghis Khans, the great military regimes back in the years. They know the environment, they know the terrain, they know how to attack, they know when to attack, they know when the sun goes down, they know when to corner in the Cordillera Mountains, where to corner the Spaniards. They know, Aguinaldo know where to position himself, so it's a narrow pathway so the Spaniards can get through. Mm-hmm. So they have to fight hand to hand. They have to fight them with their cannons and guns and muskets and bolos hand to hand in a small area using Philippine knowledge. Because mm-hmm. they know the terrain. Apaches know the terrain. Eskimos know the terrain. Mm-hmm. You see? The Huns know the terrain. The Genghis Khan's men, the Mongols, know their horses, know their terrain, know how to attack. That's Mongol martial arts. Mm-hmm. You see? Suai Jiao, Mongolian wrestling. Part of that Mongol martial arts. Mm-hmm. Eskrima, stick fighting, knife fighting. Part of Filipino martial arts. Know your terrain, that's part of Filipino martial arts. The fact that we have kids as young as 8, 9 years old go dive for pearls without any scuba equipment, right? That's knowing their terrain. Mm-hmm. They're trained with their culture how to dive for pearl.
Sure.
You see?
Climb those tall coconut trees.
Climb tall coconut trees. You got little kids that would take a bolo and go, drop it, and then 2 strokes, boom, you're drinking coconut
yeah.
milk.
Yeah.
And they're so good with a blade. Because Filipino is a knife culture.
Mm-hmm.
That very knife culture saved the Philippines.
Sure.
That's it. That's in a sense how we won the war. It's not just the movement. It's not just the Cinco Terros. It's not just the Moro Moro that won the war. Mm-hmm. It's all these elements. It's all these elements. And throw in the technology and the help of USA.
Sure.
You know.
So, Gurneet, what are your thoughts on the current state of the Filipino martial arts? Do you think the Filipino martial arts can ever get the same status as some of the other popular martial arts like Kung Fu, Taekwondo, Karate?
That is a million-dollar question. I wish I know the answer to that. My hope is it could come close. And maybe, you know, with good instructors spreading it, we could come close. We could be there. I share the same view as some of the premier Filipino martial arts instructors do, that with some sort of unification, some sort of unity, or some sort of collaboration, right? Then you get somewhat of a standardization, mm-hmm. somewhat of a we want to play in a higher plane. Mm-hmm. We don't want just, you know, Joe Wick in martial arts, you know, taking a seminar, and he lives in Bonneville, right? And then he goes back to Bonneville and opens up a studio and calls it Filipino martial arts because he learned a weekend of seminar. Mm-hmm. You know, we would like to pursue and push higher levels in one sense.
Higher standards.
Higher standards in one sense. And also popularity in a sense that I would like to see more credit to Filipino martial arts.
Especially like the latest movies. You have movies like Bourne Ultimatum and Taken that showcase Filipino martial arts, but most people don't even know it's Filipino martial arts.
Correct. If you look at the history of Hollywood and even other cinemas, even around the world, right? We never got our credit. We never got our credit for the Filipino martial arts. Some of the movies out there, the popular ones, you never see a mention of Filipino martial arts. You might see someone in the credits, someone like, okay, Jeff Imada, we know among Filipino martial arts, He studied Filipino martial arts. He studied Chinese martial arts. He studied from Danny Masano, right? You might see him, okay, chief choreographer, stunt coordinator, or whatever, or part of the credits, right? But never a mention in the credits of any Filipino martial arts. They won't say, Filipino martial arts choreographer, Jeffrey Mata, or whoever. That's never mentioned. And in a sense, that's kind of too bad, because Filipino martial arts is a lot of knowledge that's also growing in popularity among the film choreographers and what have you. And mm-hmm. and we never got the credit. Look at the Blade, right? Wesley Snipes, mm-hmm. right? One of the stunt doubles is Jeff Ward. Jeff Ward studied Peter Tersia mm-hmm. under Tom Vizio and under Leo Gahe. He also studied a seminar under me. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, he was my seminar student. He also studied with Tom Vizio for a number of years. He studied with Leo Gahe. He's Jeff Ward. He's a great stuntman. He's a great martial artist. He's also back then in the early 80s, he was one of the premier break dancers back in the day who was involved with Hollywood stunt and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And he could do break dancing and all kinds of acrobatic moves.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And if you look at the Last Dragon, one scene in there where he wears a ninja and does a figure four stick lock over the neck mm-hmm. on the bad guy. He jumps in from the window and then does it was a scream move, but he was wearing ninja outfit.
Yeah, yeah.
So there you got ninjas, right, doing Filipino martial arts moves. Mm-hmm. But the ninja is recognized, but the move of the Eskrima Arnis will never be recognized because it kind of looks like ninja. Oh, yeah, they have the same lock.
Sure.
I think it's probably high time we need to make an FMA movie or something like that where it can really showcase some of the history behind the art and really show FMA practitioners and even have a pretty good story.
It would have to be a good story.
It would have to
right.
be a good
I've
story.
I've seen some pretty lame
because,
movies.
We can go to a local video rental place and find it's a dime a dozen for your samurai films or your kung fu films.
Right.
And, that's already kind of implanted in the American culture already.
Right.
American pop culture, I should say. And it's just until recently where you're seeing huge blockbuster movies like the Bourne trilogy, Taken,
300.
Yeah, 300 and things of that sort. Where
Equilibrium.
Where the arts are coming out, the Eskrima arts, the FMA arts are coming out. I think it's probably high time it's gonna happen.
I would think even with just like the internet too, maybe more people will be educated to the FMAs and learn more about it.
Yeah, true. The internet's a big a big medium that's pushing it and it's making it more popular. Lots of, like I said, mainstream movies incorporate FMA, but we never got the credit, right? Was it The Hunter or The Hunted?
The Hunted.
Now,
that's straight out.
How much credit was really shown? Did they show Sayok Kali Filipino martial arts? Or did they just show Sayok Kali? It's a question of how they proceed or show the credit.
Sure. And the thing is, I saw an interview of Tom Lee Jones, and he was talking about it, and he was saying, "Kali is comes from Malaysia," and even then, it's like they didn't even say it's FMA or Filipino martial arts.
Right there, we never got our credit.
Again, yeah.
Again, we never got Filipinos. Never got credit. Filipinos themselves don't give themselves credit. Filipinos come from the Philippines. Look at karate as a martial arts, right? Arnis is something that what's that? Or yeah, that was something that they use with a bolo or with a stick.
Well, it was very like utilitarian. I mean, like farmers practiced it and things like that. And I think like back in the day in the Philippines, maybe even now still, it was considered like uncool to learn Eskrima.
That too. And then also when I was growing up, it was like thuggery, you see. So we're victims of middle class mentality too. Us sitting here, we're middle class.
Sure.
Okay, or low middle class, middle class. We are a product of our middle class moms and dads. We come here with middle class values. The Filipinos that came here in the 60s, 50s, 70s, 80s were middle class. You cannot leave Philippines unless you are a professional or degreed or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's middle class values already. Whereas Eskrima, Arnis, is like the middle class values considered as a lower class. Mm-hmm. See, oh, they're thugs. Oh, they're sure. They're fighters. Oh, blah, blah, blah. But there's an art to it. You see? So you could take the art to it and infuse that to the middle class values, then it makes it cool. How do you do that? That's some formula that maybe someone like a famous person like Daniel San or Rene Preston could do, because they've done well successfully doing that. You see? You need more individuals like that who could do that, who could make it middle class. Because in the Philippines, it's considered, you know, a lower class standard, a lower class thing. Thugs use it. Fighters use it. Guys who get drunk, pull out the bolos, machetes, they use it. You know, fights, you know, they use it in fights. Now they use it in training military or what have you. So it's kind of like, you know, that. It gives that reputation. And people associate it as, oh, it's just strictly knife fighting or stick fighting. They don't see it, right, as
having techniques,
and there's a whole thing to it, and there's an art to it. They don't realize that if you study these moves from stick fighting, you could apply it to empty hand or to any weapon that you have in your hand or any situation that you have. They're applicable. It's just a matter of opening your eyes and ears to it. You know, because a lot of the moves are the same, right? A wrist lock, a figure four lock, a kick to the knees, a punch and kick. Everybody punch and kick, right? It's just that there's different disciplines that do it certain ways, you see? The other thing, they romanticize Chinese arts. For years, for centuries, dynasties of it, they romanticized Kung Fu. You see? But that never happened in Eskrima. It was never romanticized. Mm-hmm. High time it should be done. All these people who are going to grow old, maybe they start writing about it. Mm-hmm. You know? It should be done that way. You know? You got popular shows like Legend of the Seeker, or you got other sword fight movies and all that. They have choreographed scenes, and a lot of it is FMA. We're never going to get the credit. High time that they start giving credit. Mm-hmm. You see? Even a lot of the popular sword fight movies coming out of Australia or the orcs and all that, right?
Oh, Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings, you know, the choreographers in there, some people in there, you know, some of them have my train, but we're never going to see that. Mm-hmm. You see, you're not going to see the credit. You know, like I said, Jeff Ward never publicizes the FMA. Imada is never publicizes the FMA. They just show the name as stunt choreographers or stunt men. Mm-hmm. You see, but the stunt people are the ones that practice different forms of martial arts, and in particular Filipino martial arts, and it's not going to get the credit. You know, one special Lucy Liu did, right? Good thing somebody recognized Filipino martial arts, and then they showed me and Rich Drain one of our tapes saying, "This is Filipino martial arts. This is what Lucy Liu practiced." Mm-hmm. You see, so that's one credit, you know, and there's only a few instances of this type of stuff that's happening, you know. So mainstream, in a sense, needs to be much more well informed in that vein, and also us as practitioners of FMA, sure, we should also help promote. We should also, if we could write an article, if we could write a blurb, if we could show in a play, if we could talk about it in our websites, if we could talk about it in our blogs, in our Facebook, and all that. Then it becomes part mainstream.
Well, like internet content, I really feel, will help in the promotion of FMA, because the more content that's on the internet, good content that's on the internet about Filipino martial arts, the more it's going to spread out too. So, you know, if the FMA community can do something about it too by just, you know, helping to promote and, you know, write or film videos, quality video. I mean, you know, there's a lot of garbage out there too. But, you know, anything that the FMA community can do to help promote the Filipino martial arts would also be very helpful.
Right. I totally agree. Totally agree. If we could do it in our content and do a good job at it, then it will have a higher standard. It will be looked at in a higher standard.
Sure.
It would be eventually romanticized. Mm-hmm. But like I said, going back to the other arts, the Japanese, the Chinese, the Koreans, they romanticize their art. They push, they help each other. The push with the Koreans is they made an industry out of it. Mm-hmm. They're good businessmen.
Sure.
They made an industry out of it. And that's why the Taekwondo World Organization. See? Now, we don't have that in Filipinos. Filipino martial arts. There's somewhat of a attempts were made in the past, but I think, you know, it could still grow. It could still have more impact than it had. Right now, it has, you know, in a sense, minimal impact.
Mm-hmm. Well, that kind of brings us. You were talking about other instructors from different FMA backgrounds coming together in unity would be one way to help promote the FMAs and elevate it.
Right.
I know that you're going to be participating in the upcoming Katipunan 2009 event in Florida this September 5th. Do you feel this kind of event where instructors from different FMA backgrounds come together in unity will become a growing trend?
That's what we're all hoping for. I'm thinking positive thoughts, and I'm thinking the more positive light and we put the effort in. And if the effort's in, I believe people see it. I believe people see genuine effort, and I believe people are going to recognize it. And then
maybe get past all the differences. And
well, yeah, you know, there's a few instructors on that, you know, board that's coming in that's already past the differences, you know, mm-hmm. because some of those people, you know, I've seen and heard their theories firsthand. Yeah, so they're good people. If you got, you know, Guru Abon Bait and his people show up, you know they're solid and then they're open-minded. And mm-hmm. I've met a couple of the instructors under Guru Abon Bait, and they're good personnel, good people, good-hearted people. I've heard about those other groups out there, other groups in Florida, FMA groups in Florida. They're doing good things. So I'm hoping good things will happen out of this. And I'm going down there because I feel like, you know, it's a good thing, and I feel responsible that, you know, me putting in some good karma going that way and good energy going that way, it would help promote, you know. And I'm going down there on my own, you know, I'm not getting paid for this. So me volunteering my time and effort and doing something good will make a difference. And I think, you know, little efforts like that from, you know, around the, you know, in a sense, around the globe, I think, you know, would make it better. Would make it better for
and
the rest
hopefully
of
this sets an example, you know, and it'll become contagious around the world.
It could really, really lead to a larger network of people getting together.
Right.
Rather than it being a Midwest thing or the East Coast thing or a Florida thing, you know. I mean, it may take time, but we're still in the trenches, but
yeah, we are still in the trenches, and there are things in the works. There are things being planned. Guru Abon also is in the same opinion as I have that even Midwest Chicagoland area needs things like that, mm-hmm. activities kind of like that, to unify Filipino martial arts, to give a better standard to Filipino martial arts, to put Filipino martial arts in a higher standard.
Absolutely.
You know, rather than, minimize and say, okay, you know, look at the trend, right? Somebody opens a school, they teach whatever, art, karate, and weapons, Filipino martial arts, right? You got a campus school, right, opening, and then they teach 10% weapons, mm-hmm. and that's Filipino martial arts. That's the weapons part. The rest of the curriculum, Kenpo. You learn 12 forms or 15 or whatever, X amount number of Kenpo forms, and you study 3, 4, 5 nights a week of that, and you'll have one day of FMA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to me, that's not justice. And to me, that's just bad planning and bad instruction. You know what I'm saying? And if you really look at the reality of it, Filipino martial arts, right, is very, very, very good and very, very practical. That if you really look at the fight, in a real fight, what's going to hurt you more? Somebody wearing a gi? And pillows and boxing gloves, or in some kind of MMA material on a mat, or somebody out in the street with real weapons and real cars and real streets, you know, and real robberies and real people with guns and knives and real weapons coming at you. That's the stuff that could hurt you. That's the stuff that's dangerous out there.
Mm-hmm.
Out there is very, very dangerous, you know. Knife attacks, right, have risen in England recently.
Really?
They're very dangerous, you see. Knives are very dangerous, you see, right? But, however, an empty hand martial artist, you know, okay, he might knock him out. He might, you know, knock him down. He might scare somebody, right? But if you look at the end result, somebody with a weapon, the end result usually is a lot more serious, a lot more dangerous.
I really think that does a real injustice to the student who is attending that. I kind of call them the pseudo FMA schools, and where it's under the guise you can learn some FMA at this place, but it's really 90% something else. Taekwondo. 90% Taekwondo and 10% or even 5% FMA.
Right.
And even that kind of training is a very poor kind of training, in a sense. And I know you really, really discussed that earlier in the interview, or earlier in our discussion.
One other thing that you want to look into is the economics of running martial arts schools. It's certainly more economical for them to have Taekwondo Kenpo so they could have 50 kids, students, 10, 20 teenage students, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 adults, whatever, learning Kenpo or Taekwondo or something. And maybe only 4, 5, 6, less than 10 want to learn Filipino martial arts, stick fighting. And also part of that is economics. Part of that is because you got a bunch of poor instructors who don't know jack squat about Filipino martial arts teaching Filipino martial arts. It's still pervasive out there. And I still see it. There's not a whole lot of good talent yet in the FMA. A lot of good talent in Kung Fu, a lot of good talent in Japanese arts, a lot of good talent in Korean arts, a lot of good talent in Muay Thai arts. Right? I think FMA is still lacking a lot of talent that needs to be out there. You know, and that's one of my main goals also in pushing it and unifying it and trying to help unify it, trying to help promote it. Also pushing defensive method, because now I have a system, I have a standard to push, and I have, in a sense, somewhat of a mission to accomplish. I want to put this out there. I want to make DVDs. I want to make an online lesson. I want to push whoever my students teach, and give tests, and you know, eventually spread the art that way with quality, mm-hmm. Not so much quantity, right? But quality, and that's my little contribution, you know, to this world of FMA. And like I said, there's the economics that you can't omit, because the economics of it is, if I teach whatever XYZ Kenpo Karate or Taekwondo for 4 or 5 days, I get more students. But if I just teach 1 hour class of really Sinawali and angles of attack and disarms, right, I will look good, because yeah, I got this in my program. I got 10% of my program is teaching weapons, teaching FMA. So therefore, I look good. Therefore, I will attack more students. Therefore, my yellow page ad looks better. Mm-hmm. My internet web page looks better. Because I'm going to show, right? I'm master so-and-so, and I'm in the movies, and I'm this popular, and I made my living doing this. And here, look, people, I got FMA. I have 10% of it FMA. You see? And it does look good. It makes the resume much more fuller.
Sure.
You see? And because they have this, you know, CMA, Chinese martial arts, or Japanese martial arts, or Korean martial arts, you know, and 5-10% Filipino martial arts, it does make them look solid, makes them look good. So the economics of it is still there. Problem is, the economics don't quite make the best students. It doesn't quite protect them from the real deal. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody pulls out a knife, stabs them, somebody deals with sticks, somebody, some kind of weapon altercation anywhere, right? If all they know is, you know, 99% empty hand and 1% is training on weapons training, then they still don't know. They have no clue. They have very low quality in learning and in doing FMA moves, in doing FMA theories and concepts and techniques. Mm-hmm. They lack it.
Sure.
You see, because the concentration of those schools are on what draws the money. And that's what we're relegated to, you see. FMA was not born because of money.
No, it was born as a self-defense.
Survival, self-defense.
Yeah, way of life. A way of life for
right.
people. And, I mean, just reflecting on it myself and learning about history, it's so many times that proven over and over again the tribal warfare between different tribes. I mean, that's the development of this art form.
Right.
over time.
We got a bunch of guys with a bunch of weapons. You got to fight these bunch of guys with a bunch of weapons. You got a bunch of strong guys who are oppressors. We got to develop our own sets of warriors so we can quell the oppressors.
Exactly.
We can quell these Spanish invaders. We can quell these American invaders. We can quell these Japanese invaders. They're coming over here with heavy artillery. What are we going to fight them with? What are you going to do? You're going to fight them with pillows? You're going to fight them with wrestling mats? No, you got to fight them with real weapons. Yeah. You see? That's what FMA is. That's what FMA is. But what do people want? The economics of martial arts. People want mats. People want nice rings. People want nice mirrors. People want nice uniforms.
Yeah.
You know, there's no such thing in a real fight. There's no mats and rings in a real fight. You know,
belts.
You know, there's no tournaments with big ass trophies. You know what I'm saying? There's no such thing. You know what I mean? Trophies don't exist in a real fight. You know what I mean? You're gonna fight a whole Spanish armada, right? You're not gonna win trophies, right? You wanna quash them so they don't come around and oppress you. And that's what it was. That's what the cry of Balintawak was. Eight provinces united, smashed the Spanish invaders. You see? And that's the result. Because they said they tore the cedulas, they cry of Balintawak, they pull out the bolos, and they go, let's attack. And it went on for a long period of time. They eventually defeat the Spanish invaders. And it took a lot of effort, a lot of planning, a lot of fighting, real fighting, right? Not slap around, not slap boxing, you know. Slap boxing didn't win it, you know what I mean? Right? You know what I mean? Boxing gloves didn't win it, you know what I mean? Some kind of ring art didn't win it. You know, the real fight happened because they had real weapons, a real environment. You know, Philippines, you know, very treacherous, you know, and that's what won it. All those ingredients won it.
Do you think that's where a lot of the footwork came from, is because of the terrain in the Philippines? I mean, the Filipino martial arts is known for their sophisticated footwork.
Well, if you look at the practical side of it, right? If you're in a ring, you're going to do your alley shuffle. You go on the rice paddies, that won't work. Mm-hmm. You go on the beaches, right? We had a seminar 2 years ago in Michigan. All the takedowns that involve from the chest down will not work. Any kind of sweep, any kind of scissor will not work. Because your water up to your chest. So whatever you do, he just empties it because the water is there. The only takedowns that will work is anything with a neck or shoulder or wrist manipulation. Mm-hmm. You see? So the environment already changed that. So right there, you have to have like a waist down type of a movement, you know, to make it work. You go to the rice paddies or you go to the beach sands and all that, right? You can't, you know, mess around with boxing footwork. You know what I mean? Would you know, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee approach. Mm-hmm. When it's got sand or water or you know, riverbeds. So there, the footwork there has to change. See? So it depends on the environment in a sense. So yeah, footwork is in a sense, you know, important. Because the terrain, the environment, you know, determines what you're going to use, what you're allowed to use.
Mm-hmm. Well, Gurnate, do you have any closing thoughts? I know we talked about a lot today.
Well, I'm hoping that there is a better future for Filipino martial arts in general. And I'm also hoping and also making efforts to promote the defensive method and, in a sense, make a good effort to make it better or to improve it. Mm-hmm. And essentially, that's my effort. It takes a lot of effort to do that type of stuff. And that's what I aim to do, to make quite a good effort towards those goals.
Gurnate, thank you very much for taking the time out to interview with us and to tell us about yourself and your method.
Thanks, Gurnate, for really sharing your experiences with us, especially experiences with your... Very interesting.
Thank you. I'm glad I was able to share it with you.